OTC is go.
Pegasus is go.
PTC is go.
Copy us is go.
Houston flight is go.
Polycom.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people.
On RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, Tuesday night show. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you today?
You know what? I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay.
What about you?
I'm hanging in there.
Well, that's the whole idea.
That's true.
You know,
I'm tired and no appetite because, boy, did we eat last night.
You went to the all-you-could-snarf fancy food restaurant.
Oh, my God, a 5-star Italian restaurant.
Oh, man.
That was unbelievable. And I have never, I don't think, eaten as much as I ate last night. And I'm not used to it. And let me tell you, folks, when you overeat, I didn't get a stomach ache or anything, but when you overeat, or at least when I overeat, I get very tired the next day.
I think that's true for everybody.
I'm not used to it.
It sounds to me like the place you went is a lot like the place we have here in Woodlake called Ma's Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Right there on Highway 20 and Main Street. No, it's not on Main Street. It's a block over. It's on Lake Street.
Okay.
I think that's... I don't know what street it is. It's a big town. I can't keep track of all the streets.
Oh, yes. You're 62 people.
Well, there's like 6 streets in town. I can't be expected to know all of them.
Oh, okay.
I know the one I live on. That's the important one.
Okay, if you say so.
But no, I honestly haven't been over to Ma's Cafe yet. They just opened a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't had a chance to go over there yet. But one of these days, real soon, I'm going to go.
Okay.
And then I'll give you a report on the 5-star food and service at Ma's.
Oh, yeah, along with the 5-star food was the 5-star white glove service. It was fun, but it's not, you know, you can't eat like that every day.
No. And, you know, there are people that try, but I don't see how you can do it. I really don't. I mean.
No.
You know.
I don't either.
We've got a good pizza place. That's about 35 miles away.
Okay. I like pizza.
You know, and Susan brought home some pizza. She was there over the weekend. She brought home pizza. And they hand make everything. They do their own sauce. They do their own crust. Everything. And it's really good.
Newsflash. Really good. Most good pizza places do that.
Well, yes, but you have to understand where I live. You know,
that's true.
Most of the pizza places around here have Hut after the name.
Mm.
Pizza Hut.
Probably one of the worst pizza there is.
You know, and I mean, honestly, there's only a couple other places. There's the Old Mill in Valentine, and I have not yet had their pizza, but I understand it's phenomenal. They make all their own stuff. And then this one over in Bassett, which is about 35 miles, and they hand make all their stuff, and it's great. Absolutely phenomenal. So, that's as close as we get to an Italian restaurant.
Ah, okay. No, we got lots of them.
Well, you know, you have more than 63 people that live in your town, so.
Yeah, about 30,000. Yeah.
So that makes a difference.
Which is still considered a small town by today's standards.
Not around here, it's not. Folks, we got a lot of stuff to cover tonight. Now, Diane and I co-wrote an article. We got it published on Monday. We wrote it a week ago. And we're going to be discussing that article. That's going to take up the bulk of the show tonight. What will happen? An educated guess. That's the title of the article. It's dealing with Russia, Ukraine, Biden, and things that the mainstream media simply will not tell you.
And it appears from news that's coming out now and people saying things that we wrote a week ago. Seems we nailed the Ukraine situation right on the head.
Yeah, if you want to know what's really going on over there, I advise you stay tuned to Right Side Patriots tonight, because we're going to get into all of that. But let's start with quick hitters. And we begin by going up north. The Canadian truckers in the Freedom Convoy are doing great things up there. They've got traffic in Ottawa snarled and at a standstill. They've got that spineless, nutless wonder that leads Canada, Trudeau. They've got him in hiding.
Yes.
Okay. Which is really funny because the truckers aren't doing anything. You know, it's not like the BLM. They're not burning down cities. They just park their trucks.
Well, what they're complaining about, what Trudeau's complaining about, is while the truckers are protesting, goods and services are not getting to the Canadians. But what he didn't count on is now American truckers are joining them. And I got word a few days ago that there's going to be a trucker march on D.C. later this month.
Yes, and it's going to take the southern route. It's going to come out of California. It's going to go through the southern states, because you can't count on the weather up north. It'd be really nice if it went down I-80. I'd drive down to I-80 a couple hours away and cheer them on. But, you know, it's going to be down in the southern tier of the states. And then they're going to cut north up the East Coast to Washington, D.C. So that's the route. But these Canadian truckers earlier today tied up traffic big time on a bridge. It's the main crossing from the U.S. into Canada, a bridge between Detroit and Canada.
Right. It's called the Ambassador Bridge, and they had to close it at about 8 p.m., and that left thousands of truckers stranded on Detroit roads, which is kind of great because it messed up Detroit, too.
Now, normally I'm not a big fan of traffic jams, but in this case, I kind of am.
Yes, because they're sending a message. You know, Biden tried to pass the buck. The reason the goods and services aren't getting to our stores is because the cargo ships are still backed up in California. And while some of them have rerouted here to Florida at DeSantis's welcome, many of them need to unload in California and then disperse outward from there.
Right.
So they're furious now. The truckers have had it because what Biden did, he has shifted the blame to the truckers. This has nothing to do with the truckers. There are plenty of truckers to get the goods and services to America. But Biden and his asinine mandates is what's screwing everything up.
The same thing up in Canada with Trudeau. Now, yesterday, Trudeau was referring to the truckers in the convoy as Nazis.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I might need a quick history lesson here. I don't recall, and maybe you do, did the Nazis set up bouncy castles for the kids?
I don't think so. What he did with the kids was throw them in ovens.
Because, you know, the Canadian truckers have set up bouncy castles in Ottawa for kids to come and play. Now, I don't recall the Nazis ever doing anything with bouncy castles. But, you know, we're not talking about terrorists here. We're not talking about Nazis here. And you know what, Gary Trudeau, when you start talking about Nazis and comparing what's going on in Ottawa right now, comparing the truckers to Nazis, you are severely diminishing what the Nazis actually did and the horrors that the Nazis committed.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, you know, a typical liberal scapegoat. They will divert and deflect the blame or even the alludings to a point in history, especially the Holocaust. They love to throw in the Holocaust every chance they can get, which is kind of an insult to the survivors of the Holocaust, families of Holocaust victims, and really to Jews everywhere.
You're absolutely right. And the other thing, yep, Trudeau was... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The other thing Trudeau was saying was that they were flying Confederate...
Mason discipline.
Well, that's what I thought. But according to Trudeau, apparently there's a bunch of Confederates up there.
Trudeau's lucky if he knows true Canadian history, let alone American history.
I say go, truckers, go.
Absolutely. You know. We support them 100%. And we're going to be having a big convoy from Florida going up there.
Good. That's good.
Yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll keep an eye on all of that. But I'm gonna go out on a limb, make a prediction. I think eventually... given another week or so, Trudeau's going to have to cave.
Oh, absolutely. You know, start lifting restrictions, pull back on the mandates. This had to do with inter-country travel between Canada and the U.S., and he's going to have to step back on all of that, or he's going to basically economically collapse his country.
I'll tell you the funniest part of the whole thing so far is 2 days ago, over the weekend, Trudeau sent a bunch of tow trucks up there to start towing those semis out, and the tow truck drivers parked their tow trucks and joined the convoy.
I know.
That to me is the best part of the whole thing.
These politicians can only pass blame for so long. Eventually, people are going to wake up and take action, and that's what these truckers did.
And more power to them.
Absolutely.
Your governor, Ron DeSantis, speaking of Florida, he's at it again. He has some advice for Joe Rogan, the podcaster. You know, Joe Rogan's been in hot soup over the last few months because he keeps looking for alternatives and discussing alternatives to the government mandates on his podcast. Then it came out the other day that he used the N-word several times during his podcast. Of course, I had to take the recordings out of context to make a little montage of it because, you know, he was talking about quotes. He was talking about, you know, people like Richard Pryor being able to say the word nigger. He was talking about Chris Rock being able to use the word nigger, you know, and so they take all that out of context, and then you wind up with that song, you know, nigger, 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 nigger.
Yes.
And, you know, so Ron DeSantis had some, I think, sage advice. What did he suggest to Joe Rogan?
Basically, in a nutshell, that he should not apologize for previous statements made. Very simple.
I agree.
Okay. You know, this is the whole mob mentality situation. You do what we say or else we're coming after you. I mean, his statement was longer, but basically that's it in a nutshell. And I give Spotify a lot of credit because Spotify recently sent a letter to their employees stating the company would not be silencing Rogan.
Well, that's good.
And by the way, we also have some of our old podcasts up on Spotify.
Well, yeah, you know, and we don't have the kind of listenership Joe Rogan has.
No, of course not.
He's got 11 million listeners over there.
Of course. Of course. And President Trump basically issued the same statement. You don't need to apologize to these people. And you know what everybody forgets? There's an old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, it seems that a certain minority group can't take it. They can dish it out. They can call white people every vile name in the book. But you say the N-word, and oh my God, it's like their world collapses.
Well, folks, you may know if you watch Gutfeld at night on Fox, you may know of Tyrus. Tyrus is a mountain of a man.
Mm-hmm.
He also happens to be black. And he came out yesterday and he said, these liberals, this cancel culture crap, they got to stop trying to use black people as their excuse for canceling other people.
Right. But you want to know something, Craig? It won't stop until the vast, majority of good, decent, hardworking black people stand united and tell this minority group within the black population to shut the hell up. You don't speak for us.
Well, and you're right. You're 100% right. But I can tell you this: if Tyrus told me to stop doing something, I'd stop it right now. that guy is huge.
Okay? Yeah.
I mean, he's like 6'7" and 390 pounds.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
That guy is massive.
And he's a conservative.
and he's funny.
Yeah, he is. He is.
That guy's got a wicked sense of humor, and I love it. But, DeSantis and Trump both have told Rogan, you got to stop apologizing to the idiots. And they're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I apologize to no one of that persuasion for the simple reason I wasn't alive back then. I didn't do anything to anyone. And no one alive today, no black person alive today was a slave, period.
Not in this country.
Plain and simple.
It's a matter of history. Look it up. Mm-hmm. Figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that tough. James Carville, there's a liberal idiot for you. James Carville, the talking head, has called the unvaxxed pieces of shit and says he wants to punch them in the face without having to be liable for it.
Yeah. Well, if James Carville wants to be led like a lamb to a slaughter, are getting sicker from the Omicron and assorted other little variants that they're keeping under their hat, then unvaccinated people are.
You know,
plain and simple.
Have you seen Carville lately?
He looks like a caricature of his former self.
Well, he's an old man, and there's not a whole lot to him, right? Mm-hmm. And when he talks about wanting to take people out and punch them in the face, I don't think he could take Justin Trudeau, and Trudeau is about the most weenified person in the Northern Hemisphere.
That's true. I don't think he can take me out.
I don't think he can take out a wet paper sack.
I know. I mean, it's ridiculous. These liberals have the big mouths. They love to spout off and hear themselves talk about what they're going to do, what we should do. But you know what? It's all talk. They don't do anything.
No. But, It's time people like Carville and other liberal Marxists get over this false notion that the unvaxxed are killing everybody else.
Right.
There's nothing to back it up. There's no statistics to back that up. None.
Right. Absolutely none. In fact, the vax people, recently they had to temper back the time frame between doses because it has now been proven that some people who get vaxxed have heart inflammation.
Well, especially young men.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Under the age of 35, many young men are getting it. It's fleeting for the most part. It does resolve itself, but in some cases, it has killed.
Well, and nobody
and
wants it.
These are triple jabbed and boosted young men. And it's also affecting women as well. And now, the idiots, Fauci and crew, wants babies, children under 5
to
have that crap put in their bodies.
No way. If you're a parent and you do that, you're guilty as child abuse.
Yeah. This is an unproven vaccine. It's not even really a vaccine because it doesn't do what a vaccine's supposed to do. When was the last time you heard a true vaccine? Like the diphtheria vaccine, the smallpox vaccine,
right,
where you need to be boosted countless times within months of having the vaccine?
Never.
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 Now, let me ask you this, Diane. It's a medical question. I don't know that you would know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. You talk about the heart problems, men specifically under the age of 35, that they get with the vax, the next vax, the booster, all this. You say it resolves itself in most cases.
Sometimes, yes.
Okay. But what about lingering effects? Can the damage that's caused by that, even though it resolves itself now, can that come back to haunt them maybe a few decades down the road?
Yeah, of course it can. But it hasn't been happening long enough. We're not that far out from COVID yet to do studies of people that have had certain side effects because not enough time has gone by. And I would guess that in a number of decades, we're going to see men having heart problems that can be traced back to the vax.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I asked the question. I mean, obviously, we're not far enough removed yet to know, but I would think if you have inflammation of the heart now, that could weaken things.
Right.
And then 20, 30 years from now, that might rear its ugly head once again.
Make you more susceptible to heart damage, to heart attacks, to blockages in the heart. We don't know. We are not far enough out. The problem was they rushed this vaccine to market way too fast. They didn't even give it a chance for herd immunity to kick in. And now we're, people are facing the ramifications of this vaccine.
Not good.
Hey, I'm proud. I'm unvaxxed, unjabbed, never will be. And there's no amount of money you can give me to put that poison inside of myself.
No, when I was at the doctor a couple of months ago, they said, well, you can go ahead and get the vaccine if you want it. And I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why would I want to do that? I said, now that I've had COVID, I'm more protected than I would be with the vaccine.
Yeah.
They agree.
The only people that are more protected than you are people like me who have been out in public because I live in the free state of Florida without a mask. I have kept up my daily life and I've caught nothing, knock on wood, because my immune system is very strong, obviously.
Yeah.
And who knows? I could have had COVID and my immune system fought it off. We never allowed that to happen.
you could have had it and been what they call asymptomatic.
Correct.
You know, never even knew it. Yeah.
You just don't know. And by the way, would I ever take a COVID test? No, because I believe that a given number of them are already pre-programmed to show positive. Even if the person is negative.
I don't think they know what they're doing, honestly.
I don't either.
I just don't. It's a government-run operation. Why should I trust it?
Yeah, and not only that, you know how, and I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again. If you want your free COVID vaccines or masks, you have to fill out a questionnaire and a form, and you send it in electronically. And then within a few days, you'll get your tests and whatever. Hello, guys. How do you think they keep track of who's vaxxed and who's not?
Exactly. Look, folks, it's the government, right? This is the same outfit that's now giving you medical advice, right?
Right.
Is the same outfit that raises the price of stamps just so they can put more next window please signs at the post office.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just what it is. Look, finally, in the quick hitters, we only have a few minutes left, but we got to get this in. The Olympic ratings are in the toilet.
Yes, and they should be, because number one, after this little COVID gift from China, we had no business being there at all.
No, and apparently a lot of Americans feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's watching.
No, I love figure skating. Absolutely love it, whether it's the singles, the doubles, the dance. I just love figure skating. I haven't watched 1 second of it. And I heard one of the Americans is like blowing them away, but sorry, I won't watch it.
No, I've got no interest. None.
None.
No interest at all. I watch, in the past, I have watched some of the figure skating because my wife insists on watching it. Now, she hasn't watched any of the Olympics yet either.
Okay.
Year. Okay, but in the past, let's watch figure skating. It's like, oh, must I?
Oh, yes, I love figure skating.
You know? Now, I do like the skiing in the Winter Olympics. I do like that, you know, and I like they call it speed skating. I like that, you know, I have in the past. I've watched some of the Olympic hockey games in the past. You know, anything where people could wipe out and get hurt, I'll watch it, you know. Figure skating, yeah, people fall down, but rarely do they ever get hurt. I mean, the last serious injury in figure skating was when Tanya Harding bashed the other girl's knee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was an iconic moment. But to show you how bad this Olympics is bombing out, the opening ceremonies, which is the big thing, only drew 14 million viewers worldwide. That's down 43%. From the 23.8 million people who watched the opening ceremony at the last Winter Games in Pyeongchang back in 2018. So it's, you know, it serves them right. They deserve it.
Right. I agree.
We should not have been there. No American team should have gone there.
I can't bring myself to do it. I can't bring myself to turn it on. I just can't do it.
Right. I can't either.
Yeah. That's just the way it is. Folks, we've made it to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get started on the article Diane and I co-wrote last week, published on Monday, yesterday. The title of that is What Will Happen? An Educated Guess. It deals with Russia, the Ukraine, Biden, and other elements that nobody in the mainstream media wants to talk about. But we will. So stay with us. There's more to come on Right Side Patriots.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It is the Tuesday night edition of the show. Trust me, you're going to want to stay tuned for the entire next hour of this show. However, if you miss any part of it, you can always go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning. Get the podcast. It's free. You don't have to sign up. Just click the podcast button and you're one of the pod people.
Yes, and our pod people keep growing by the show.
Now, we're going to tell you what's going to go on Friday night show a little bit later in this show tonight. But for now, let's get into this article you and I co-wrote about Ukraine, about Biden, about Russia, and other elements called What Will Happen? An Educated Guess.
Okay, and let's start with, will there or won't there be a war? What with Russian troops still amassing at Ukraine's border? A war not just between Ukraine and Russia, but a war also between a statist versus a man so blind to the truth that he's willing to risk our country getting involved in yet another foreign war. And this is something we surely don't need, especially after having recently lost such a war due to this one man's ineptitude and incompetence. Joe Biden versus Russian President Vladimir Putin, a man who, while having all the outward trappings of a communist, is actually a statist, a nationalist, a man not so unlike President Donald Trump, who put America first above all else. Remember, Putin is not trying to rebuild the old Soviet Union. He knows better than to attempt that, but is a man trying to resurrect the grandeur and importance that was once Mother Russia, a statist goal if ever there was one. And he's doing so at the expense of a weak and feeble-minded U.S. president by using the threat that if his now called for demands cannot be resolved diplomatically, that he will resort to what would be a sustained and bloody military action. Brave but challenging words for sure. Words that see the world bearing witness to Russian troops currently amassing at the Ukraine-Russian border. But to date, as we write this, those troops have not crossed even one inch onto Ukrainian soil, nor have they gathered in what is the all-important battle formation. These troops are sitting and waiting for orders that might or might never come. Armed troops being but the key visual component, broadcast to the world in a cleverly crafted public show of force. A show of force which now includes a Russian missile cruiser and a frigate, carrying a specially equipped helicopter, practicing ways of locating submarines, something not unexpected, as it's typical of both Russian war games and routinely practiced military exercises, simply, it's our opinion that this is political posturing at its best and is being used solely as a bargaining chip, so to speak, to give added strength to Putin's list of so-called security demands, or what he referred to as a proposed treaty. Sent to a high-ranking U.S. diplomat stationed in Moscow back in early December 2021, this treaty called for, amongst numerous other things, that Ukraine never be granted membership in NATO, something they do want, a legally binding security agreement that NATO will not expand its military infrastructure nor its alliances eastward, the removing of NATO troops and bases from all former Soviet Union territory, as well as the ending of Western military assistance to Ukraine, including a ban on intermediate-range missiles being in Europe, especially since an alliance of Ukraine with NATO could allow Ukraine to become a launchpad for NATO missiles to target and strike Russia. And honestly, Craig, Putin does have some credence here, for if Ukraine were to become part of NATO, two opposing forces would then be sitting right on each other's doorstep. We wouldn't like it if we were faced with such a scenario. So logic alone dictates that Russia, that Putin, wouldn't like it either.
You know, I can understand maybe not allowing Ukraine to join NATO, but I don't think the other former Soviet entities are going to have go without NATO troops. I just don't see Putin getting that. But, you know, what does he want? I mean, I guess that's really what this comes down to. What does a guy like Putin want with Ukraine? I mean, is it Ukraine itself that he wants, or is it something else?
Well, in a way, it's a little bit of vengeance and face-saving because, simply put, Putin is jockeying for control of Ukraine, not for its territory per se, nor as a means to end the country's infighting, but primarily to use as a barrier against NATO's Western expansion. And it's that expansion that, since the Cold War ended, has seen NATO expanding eastwards, with 14 new countries becoming members, including countries that were once part of the old Soviet Union, a very bitter pill that Putin and Russia have been forced to swallow. And know that Vladimir Putin, while a U.S. adversary, is a smart man, as well as being an expert tactician and realist. And he knows well that this is his actually taking over Ukraine would mean sending even more troops to the border. And he also knows that NATO's members have made it clear that while they are sending weapons to Ukraine and will continue to do so, that they will not be party to actual fighting in Ukraine. Also, Putin knows well that we have but four brigades in Europe, and that Europe herself, including Great Britain, has but two or three at the most, which is not nearly enough to defeat the Russian army if it came to an all-out ground war. A war Putin himself does not want, for the blood being shed, if such a war were to take place, would be both catastrophic in nature to both sides and accomplish nothing in the end. And to that effect, we believe that what Vladimir Putin is now doing is simply showing the world that he will protect Russia, her interests, and her citizens if need be. But protect them from what exactly? To understand that, one must understand Russian-Ukrainian history, a history that is convoluted at best, as both Russia and Ukraine actually claim the same heritage, a heritage originated from what's called the Rus, where in the 10th century, several tribes and clans of different ethnicities united together and became one under the Byzantine Church. Simply, Russians and Ukrainians have essentially become one and the same people, yet they are divided by both language and politics. In fact, albeit very briefly, Ukrainian volunteers fought rebels in the Moscow-aligned Donbass region, a region that rose up against the central government in Kiev, citing in part its violation of their right to speak Russian. And this fighting came to a head in 2014 when after months of what turned into deadly protests between Russian and Ukrainian speakers led to the toppling of Ukraine's pro-Western government. And it was this event that led to the Minsk Protocol, an agreement which sought to end the war in the Donbas region via an immediate ceasefire and decentralization of power, which in turn, if it had been successful, would hopefully have led to Russia's de-annexation of Crimea. Remember, Russian control over Crimea, wanted primarily but not solely for its strategic value, was also established in 2014, with Crimea being administered as part of the Russian Federation. That is, Craig, except for the northern areas of the Arabat Spit and the Syvash, which are still controlled by Ukraine.
You know, a lot of people kind of remember hearing several years back about the Minsk Protocol, but, you know, because it was not something that directly involved the U.S., most people didn't really pay that much attention to what was going on there. Can you provide a little bit of background maybe on the Minsk Protocol?
Sure. Actually, the Minsk Protocol itself was crafted by the Trilateral Contact Group on Ukraine, as in Ukraine, the Russian Federation, and the so-called Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, otherwise known as the OSCE, and was brokered by leaders of France and Germany in what was called the Normandy format. And while this agreement failed to stop the fighting, as did a second go-round known as Minsk II, the stage had been set for Ukraine to remain a permanent point of contention for Russia, whose focus has now shifted to Ukraine, officially becoming once again an integral and accepted part of Mother Russia, as in the Russian Federation. So by now, it should be obvious that Ukraine to Putin is the prize that would help restore Russia's former glory, while to Biden, Ukraine is where yet another weakness in his administration's foreign policy objectives, Craig, is easily seen.
You know, I don't know that there's any strong point in Biden's foreign policy. If there is, I haven't seen it. And I'm not trying to be flippant about it. I just haven't seen it.
Truth is truth.
I mean, you know, it kind of is what it is. Look, when it comes to Vladimir Putin, if there's one thing that Vladimir Putin is not, it's a coward. And if there's one thing Vladimir Putin is or has, it's a backbone. None of the rhetoric coming from Washington means anything to Putin. And in fact, if you listen carefully, you can hear the Kremlin laughing. Biden, a spineless coward, has promised severe sanctions against Russia should Putin move militarily against Ukraine. But, as is always the case with Biden, it's nothing but mindless blather. Putin is willing to listen, not because he fears such sanctions, but because he's keenly interested in Biden's plans so that he can line up his own countermeasures. Remember, during the 2020 campaign, when Biden said in a debate that he has stood up to Putin in the past? Well, one can only assume that he was speaking about the sanctions put on Russia when Biden was the vice president back in 2014. Those sanctions were, at best, laughable. The Obama-Biden administration sanctioned several low-hanging fruit entities like smaller Russian banks, low-level officials, and even a handful of non-essential diplomats. It was a joke, and Putin did not for a moment consider getting out of Crimea either because of those threats of sanctions or even the implementation of the sanctions. This time around, Biden is threatening major sanctions, which could include Russia's financial system and its sectors deemed critical to the Kremlin. Biden is threatening severe consequences should Putin launch a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Note that the severe consequences come if Putin launches a full-scale invasion against Ukraine, but Biden has already given a wink and a nod to a minor incursion. Among other sanctions being considered against Russia are export control measures that could halt Russia's ability to import smartphones and key aircraft or automobile electronic parts. Biden's also considering banning exports to Russia of microelectronics and computer chips designed using U.S. software or produced using U.S. equipment. Diane, let's be clear on these proposed sanctions. There is nothing on that list that Russia couldn't obtain from their allies like China, as Russia's economic system can withstand the financial sector sanctions easily, and Putin knows full well that imposing the tech sanctions will, in fact, hurt the U.S. far more than they would affect Russia.
Well, actually, there is one thing. And it's been, you know, bantered back and forth. And while Putin, you know, I should say, while Biden thinks, you know, he's got Putin by the neck on this one thing, I think Vladimir Putin has something else to say about that. And especially, Craig, tell everybody what it is.
Well, you're talking about oil, right?
Yes.
That, too, is nothing but rhetoric when one examines the truth of that matter. Russia has a proven 80 billion barrel reserve of oil on hand. Russia is a major oil and gas producer. In fact, they have the largest reserves of natural gas on Earth, and they're the largest exporter of it. Russia also has the sixth largest oil reserves, and they're one of the largest producers of oil. Most people don't know it, but last year, Russia's oil output was up 2.4%, to 10.52 million barrels per day. This year, Russia expects to produce somewhere between 10.84 and 11.05 million barrels per day. But Biden is threatening to take away Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline should a full-scale invasion be launched against Ukraine. Should that make Putin think twice? In a word, no. And here's why. That pipeline, the Nord Stream 2, isn't even operational yet. Russia isn't getting one single drop out of that pipeline. Do you really think Putin's worried about losing a pipeline that hasn't even been built yet? Of course not. And especially when one considers how much oil Russia is already producing, as mentioned before. Obviously, threatening the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is nothing but mindless blather from Biden, and just as obviously, Putin is not concerned by it. But what of other threatened energy sanctions against Russia? Threats from Biden regarding restricting the financing of new gas exploration and production in the country, as well as extending existing bans of transfer on technology in the energy sector, would be counterproductive to the U.S. and our European allies, and Putin knows it. Russia's oil production company, Rosneft Oil Company, is roughly 20% owned by British Petroleum. Shell and ExxonMobil Corp. are both drilling for oil and natural gas in the eastern part of Russia, near Sakhalin Island, and the UK's Glencore Corp. trades in Russian metal and in Russian oil. Diane, sanction what Biden is threatening to sanction, and the ripple effect will harm U.S. and European allies' efforts and energy flow, causing prices in our country and theirs to necessarily rise even higher than prices are predicted to rise this summer.
Well, you know, if Biden does what he does, Putin has every right to retaliate in his own way. And Putin, I'm sure, has thought this all through. And I believe in tit-for-tat action, he's going to take some action.
Well,
especially against the big companies.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. You know, I mean, look, should Biden impose the energy sanctions against Russia that he's talking about, you shouldn't be one bit surprised if Putin, in that tit-for-tat reprisal, orders Shell, ExxonMobil, and maybe even BP out of eastern Russia and takes control of those operations, thus increasing Russian oil and gas production while also increasing Russian exports. So now you can see and easily understand why the threatened economic sanctions are pretty much meaningless to Putin. Putin wants Ukraine not just for strategic, sentimental, or land acquisition reasons, but also for the natural resources available in Ukraine. While neither oil nor natural gas are high on the list for Putin, it is the abundance of other natural resources, things like coal, iron ore, manganese, salt, graphite, sulfur, kaolin, titanium, nickel, magnesium, timber, and mercury, that Putin wants. Resources which will surely add to Russia's manufacturing capabilities while adding money to Russia's economy in the process. What it is yet another reason why we don't believe a full-scale invasion of Ukraine is something Putin wants or intends to undertake. Think about it. Why would he devastate Ukraine and make it that much harder and that much more expensive to rebuild the infrastructure necessary for Russia to take advantage of what Ukraine has in the way of natural resources? I mean, when you get down to it, he wouldn't. It's just that simple. Now, Diane, I think we need to take maybe a quick break here at this point. Talk about what we have discussed in this article up to this point. And bear in mind, folks, there's stuff coming. I guarantee you, in the next segment of this show, that you will never hear in social media. You'll never hear any of this stuff. And it's mind-blowing when you think about it. And I know I've gotten some responses from it. I'm sure Diane has, too.
Yes.
People say, well, we never even thought about that.
Mm-hmm. But, and it's right in front of our faces. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Certain things that are going on that we're not being told about. All you have to do, folks, is look at the big picture and look at the really who are all the players involved.
Well, and quite frankly, in the next segment of the show, Diane's going to tell you about some players that are involved in this that most people would never dream had a hand in this at all, or had a dog in the hunt, but they do.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's pretty strange. But, you know, up to this point, you know, what we're discussing here, basically, in this segment, is why Putin would be foolish to make a full-scale invasion of Ukraine.
Yes, and it's come to light today that even some of his own trusted generals are now telling him, don't do it. The price in blood will be too great.
You know,
and when has anybody ever really said no to Putin? But some of the generals are saying it.
Well, you know, this is a question that you and I have to ask. Nobody else is going to ask it, so I guess maybe we should. Are the generals telling Putin don't do it on their own, or do they have inside knowledge that he's not going to do it, and this is what Putin wants them to be saying in public?
That's the whole thing. That's what I have been saying, and you have been saying since day one. I have never believed that Russia will go in and forcibly take Ukraine. This isn't the 1940s. This isn't Nazi Germany. We're also in the nuclear age. Putin wouldn't be that foolish. He's a smart man. You're not dealing with a Joe Biden who doesn't know what he's doing. Putin knows exactly what he's doing. He's calculating. He could be deceitful. And he's putting on the greatest dog and pony show ever. But what he's basically doing is flexing his muscle, trying to restore the grandeur that was Russia, that was taken away from Russia by the Soviets, basically. And he wants to return that glory to her. So what better way to do it in today's world than put on the greatest show ever, a show of military force to show the world, look what I have, look what I can do. But at the same time, look at my humanity. I'm not going to do it. But it doesn't mean he won't go in politically.
Well, and we're going to discuss that in the next segment, too. You know, that's another part of this that people aren't really paying much attention to. But, you know, when you boil it all down, the signs just aren't there. You know, you hear on the mainstream media, you see it in the headlines, you know, Russian invasion of Ukraine is imminent. But is it? I mean, yes. That's the thing. You know, Diana and I, we've been following this literally since the day Putin started moving troops toward the border. And we're just not seeing the signs that this is a legitimate buildup to an invasion. We're just not seeing it.
No, we're not. There, certain amount of manpower is there. I believe it's 70% of his forces. To do that kind of takeover of Ukraine, he really needs 100% of the active military at the border, and they're not there. They're 70% there. They're also not, like I said, in battle formation. They're not doing anything. They're just there. That's not how troops would act as you're preparing for an invasion.
No. And
but it is the way you would act if you're putting on a show.
Well, and that's what all the earmarks are at this point. Look, you know, we're calling this an educated guess. Okay, it's right in the title of this article. But you can never say never. I mean, you know, that's kind of foolish. You can't say, well, there's absolutely 100% no way he's ever going to do this, you know. But you read the tea leaves, you look at the signs, you look at what he's doing, you look at what he's asking for. You know, we've talked about that earlier in this segment of the show. You know, what is it that the man wants? Well, he wants Ukraine not to ever become part of NATO. Okay, that seems like something he could probably get. You know, he wants all of NATO's troops out of former Soviet-controlled areas. I don't think he's going to get that. You know, I don't think they're going to want to give it up.
In fact, some of the former Soviet satellites are already members of NATO.
Right, and he wants NATO's troops out of there, right? NATO's not going to pull those troops out, and Putin knows it. Okay, what he's doing there is he's over-asking. He knows what he wants, but he's asking for a lot more so that down the road he can say, well, I conceded this and this. You know, I mean, it's a poker game. You know, this is a poker game.
Yes, it is.
And he has a good hand, but he doesn't have the kind of hand that'll beat everything else. He's not sitting there with four aces.
No. And you call it a poker hand. I more liken it to a game of chess versus someone playing checkers.
Right.
For the simple reason is Biden doesn't know what he's doing. This is not our war. And yet, he's kind of making it our war. Is he doing it to make up for his screw-up in Afghanistan? Or is he doing it so we screw up even more and we get knocked down even more on the world stage? It's like a flip of a coin. You don't know which way to go with the way Biden thinks.
Well, look, we've only got a
thinks.
Yeah, that's just it. We've only got a few seconds left in this segment. We got to take a break, but let's be honest here. Biden hasn't faced down a tough guy since he faced down Corn Pop in the parking lot of a swimming pool. Okay? And he's desperate for something to make him look like he's got gravitas, which he doesn't have.
Right.
You know, and so
exactly.
You know, that's kind of where Putin stands. Okay, look, we got to take a break here at the top of the hour. Now, I promise you, when we come back and we continue this, what will happen, an educated guess, Diana's going to let you know about entities that have a dog in the hunt that most people don't even realize have a dog in the hunt. And if the mainstream media knows it, they're too afraid to say it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So stay with us. There's plenty more to come on Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at The National Patriot, Diane Sori at The Patriot Factor. Folks, if you missed any part of the show, or if you do miss any part of the show, this is one you don't want to miss. You go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and listen back to this show. We are giving you more information about the Ukraine, Russia, and U.S. situation in 1 hour on this show than you've been able to get since this whole thing started 3 weeks ago from any other news source in this country.
Yes.
I mean, it's just that simple. Now, Friday on this show, we're going to be joined by an old friend of the show, Jake Devonchesky. And Jake was born in Ukraine, came to the U.S. as a young man. He is now a proud, patriotic American citizen. He's going to critique what we're talking about on the show tonight. He's going to let us know if we hit it out of the park or if we whiffed on it completely. He's going to let us know, and he's going to give us some insight from people he knows, relatives of his, that still live in both Ukraine and in Russia.
Yes.
So it's going to be a fascinating show coming up on Friday. You don't want to miss it. All right. So, Diane, as we continue with what will happen, an educated guess, you bring up some players in this that most people don't even realize are players in this, but you can't brush them aside because their role in this is excessively important.
Right. Now, here is where the Ukraine situation becomes even more interesting, not just for the reasons cited, nor for the players involved, but for who is remaining somewhat silent and seemingly at this point not taking sides. And here we speak of Israel. Still, and government leaders are quick to take sides in any international dispute, as well as getting us involved in conflicts we have no business being involved in. Israel knows when it is truly best for them to lay low, because Israel has vested security interests in maintaining a cordial, constructive working relationship with Russia. After all, Russia remains the most significant military power on the ground in Syria, a country still at war with the Jewish state. And know that when he was prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu worked hard to forge a friendship and a close working relationship with Vladimir Putin, which thankfully seems to have continued on with the Lapid government, while at the same time never turning on or Israeli and Russian military coordination in Syria, coordination involving keeping Russian troops safe during Israeli retaliatory bombing raids, and the fact that Russia never condemned nor tried to stop the implementation of the Abraham Accords. In fact, Russia's ambassador to Israel, one Anatoly Viktorov, recently stated that discussions between the two countries do not focus on Ukraine, but instead focus on, quote, bilateral and regional agenda, as well as other issues, which can contribute to the further development of Russian-Israeli friendly relations for the benefit of the peoples of our country, end quotes. Words that Zelensky is Jewish and has stated that, quote, Israel is often an example for Ukraine, and both Ukrainians and Jews value freedom, end quote, which is undeniably true. And second, Israel and Ukraine have had diplomatic relations for 30 years. No need or want to burn bridges there, especially with Yevgen Kornichuk, Ukraine's ambassador to Israel and an ally of Zelensky, recently stating that Ukraine may soon officially recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, pending some security-related conditions, which is quite understandable given the talk of a possible Russian invasion, and that Ukraine is also considering opening a trade office in Jerusalem. And Russia has issued no words of contradiction, people, and should unite as Jews have in Israel, end quote. Maybe on some level, Putin knows a truth that Israel has known for quite some time, that a war waged solely in the name of nationalism will only work to a country's advantage when the cause is both just and serves all the people well. And Israel knows that taking sides in what is truly nationalistic, in the sense of being a war, serves no one well, most especially Israel. For to take sides against either country is not to Israel's advantage nor in its best interests. However, Israel might be the very country that helps to defuse the situation in a way that no one has expected. How so? Because if Iran does announce it's having a nuclear weapon within the next few weeks, as is being projected, the focus will shift off Russia and Ukraine and return once again to the Middle East. This in turn will force both Russia and Ukraine to make compromises and concessions to their individual agendas, as countering Iranian aggression will take top priority for all areas within Iran's possible launch capabilities. Remember, if Iran secures nuclear weapons, the entire region will be forced to be on high alert, because even the Russians, whose alliances with Iran are tenuous at best, sees its relationship and ties with Israel growing stronger by the day. And if there was a reinstating of the 2015 Iranian nuclear deal before an announcement is made, Iran will immediately receive sanctions relief that they in turn will use some of the funds released to help support and bolster Iranian-backed terror groups that threaten both Israel and the entire region. Simply, even the most seemingly critical of times, diverting can mean deflecting, which does tend to tepid down a crisis that is into a crisis that was, and Israel versus Iran, Craig, just might be the deflection, for we do not believe that when push comes to shove, that Russia will allow Israel to cease to exist.
You know, most people, you and I have talked about it on the show before, But most people don't realize the nature of the bond between Russia and Israel. And most people would never think that the Iran situation would come into play in the Ukrainian-Russian situation. But when you step back and look at the big picture, and that's what you and I do, you can see
the technology, medical equipment, many, many things. And Putin is not going to risk that.
No. No,
he's just not.
No,
Tourism trade between the two nations is strong. The Russian people and the Israeli people go back and forth between the two countries. Putin's not stupid. He's not going to risk a war because Israel will side with Ukraine, and Israel is no force to be reckoned with either.
Well, and you also make a very good point in the nature of the ties between Israel and Ukraine being as strong as they are. Okay.
Yes.
That puts Israel in a prime position, even though they're being very quiet right now, and they tend to work behind the scenes on things like this. But that puts Israel in a prime position to be the peace broker in this particular situation. And most people have not stepped back and looked at the big picture to even see that that's a possibility.
Right.
You know, it's fascinating. But look, the final question that has to be asked here, even if it cannot be definitively answered, is where exactly does Biden stand on the Russia-Ukraine matter? Honestly, it's kind of hard to tell. But as of late last week, we learned more about where Russia stands. Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister Alexander Grushko said that Biden's move to add some 3,500 troops to the European theater would increase military tension and reduce scope for political decisions. Okay, Grushko went on to say that Ukrainian authorities would be delighted and would continue to sabotage the Minsk Protocol with impunity, but as we've already explained, Russia has done more than their fair share of Minsk Protocol sabotaging already. So let's go back a few weeks to that disastrous press conference Biden gave when he said, and I quote, "I think what you're going to see is that Russia will be held accountable if it invades. And it depends on what it does. It's one thing if a minor incursion, and then we end up having a fight about what to do and not to do." Naturally, later that day and the next morning, Biden's communications staff and Biden himself attempted to walk that back. But it remains that he said what he said, and the whole world, including Putin, was listening. Biden literally gave Putin the wink and the nod for a minor incursion into Ukraine. Now, there's a reason for that, and we're going to get to that shortly. But first, what would constitute a minor incursion into Ukraine? Well, a minor incursion by Russia into Ukraine would most likely come by way of Russia spurring a populist uprising within Ukraine by Ukrainian Russians who would rather be Russians living in a Russia-friendly Ukraine than Russians living in a Ukraine that rather dislikes Russia. Such Ukrainian Russians don't want to go to war with their own, and they wouldn't. They would, however, vote Ukraine's current government out in favor of a government friendly to Russia and to Putin, which would suit Putin just fine because that would provide Putin unfettered access to the sorts of Ukrainian natural resources we mentioned earlier. And what we're talking about here is a much more political incursion than a military invasion. And there is one major plus for Putin in such a minor incursion over the military option. Once Russian tanks, planes, and ground forces engage, there would be no way for Putin to deny such an invasion. However, spurring a populist uprising and then engaging in cyber monkey business regarding Ukrainian elections would provide Putin an element of deniability, thus softening the blowback from NATO and possibly even from the UN. But why would Biden be in favor of a minor incursion? Simple. Ukraine has the dirt on Hunter Biden, and thus they have the dirt on Joe Biden and the rest of the Biden Organized International Crime Syndicate. Should that dirt suddenly come out from under the Ukrainian rug, while Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, remains in power and without a minor incursion by Russia, not even Obama would be able to protect Biden. However, if such a minor incursion were to take place and then an exiled Zelensky released the dirt, Obama and his puppets could cover for Biden by calling it a sour grapes false report from the former Ukrainian government and a wild right-wing conspiracy theory by conservatives in this country. Diane, Putin would never release the dirt on the Bidens because Putin rather enjoys having a dithering, blathering idiot at the helm in the United States, and a Putin-friendly Ukrainian government, they wouldn't release it either because they want what Putin wants.
Well, exactly. But you know what's very interesting about all this? We also have the characters of two men coming into play.
Oh, boy.
And Biden, I mean, he's got an easy target with Biden. But Biden is so blind to the reality of what's going on that he's trying to go up against Vladimir Putin. He can't do it.
He can't.
He doesn't have the mental capabilities to do it. Putin, in the end, is going to make mincemeat of the Obama presidency. I mean, the Obama presidency. Yes, that's really
what it is.
That's really what it is. You know, a slip of the tongue that actually has truth to it. But he's going to make mincemeat and make a laughingstock of this country because of the man who's leading it.
Look, Putin, Putin ain't corn pop. You know, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. What we do know is that Vladimir Putin is a patient man. And if patience were a coin, the other side of it would be desperation. And that's where we find Joe Biden. Biden is desperate for something he can hang his hat on from a foreign policy standpoint after the disaster he engineered with the surrender in Afghanistan. Biden is desperate to be the guy who can claim he faced down Putin and made Putin blink, which is exactly what Biden will do if Putin does nothing. Our best educated guess at this point is that Putin will get what he wants, a friendly to Russia Ukrainian government and access to the natural resources. His amassed troops will stay where they are. And while Biden crows about how tough he's been by threatening Russia, Putin will have the last laugh. Time is on Putin's side, and time will tell the final tale.
Absolutely. And you know, folks, another reason you know that no invasion is going to happen, you don't right away. The fact that it's just dragged out and dragged out, Putin's making a laughingstock of Biden.
Yeah, but I mean, when Putin does nothing, and that's what we think he's going to do, is nothing, right?
Right.
Biden's going to jump up and down and go, see, I faced him down. See how tough I am. You know, which is ridiculous. Yeah. Look, the title on this, the title on this article is What Will Happen in Educated Guess. That is our educated guess. Now, we wrote this article, Diana and I, we co-wrote it together last week. Okay? Mm-hmm. We published it yesterday.
Yes.
Okay? Today, over in France, Macron said Putin has pledged to him no new Ukraine escalation.
Right.
Now right. That's huge for a couple of reasons. First of all, it plays right into what Diane and I wrote last week. Okay, we're saying this isn't going to escalate into a war. It's not. Okay. So that plays into that. But here's the really important part of it. Putin made this pledge not to Joe Biden, but to Macron in France. Putin knows that Biden's an idiot, and he's not going to lower himself to deal with an idiot. He went to Macron, who's not much more, you know, adept, really, than Joe Biden is. But Putin wants to make it a fool out of Biden. And like you said earlier, Diane, that's an easy target. Okay? If Putin respected Biden, Putin would have told Biden, I will not escalate in Ukraine. He didn't. He told that to Macron in France.
Exactly. And also, it was late yesterday, General Keane, our General Keane, basically, in a video that is still up on YouTube, it was first on Fox, he basically said what we wrote a week ago. And everything of ours is copyrighted and dated, so we can easily prove that we said what we said a week ago. And it's amazing that some of our U.S. generals and now some Russian generals are saying the same thing in the respect of don't do it, Putin. Well, don't do it. The casualties will be too high.
I mean, the generals in Russia are saying don't do it, too many casualties. Keane, a general retired from the U.S., is saying he's not going to do it. And Putin tells Macron he's not going to escalate. So, you know, I think when you step back and look at the big picture, and that's what you and I do, I think we've got this pretty much spot on. You know, there's going to be a lot more posturing. There's going to be a lot more chest thumping, you know, and a lot more dilly-dallying about. But at the end of the day, those troops do not come across that border.
No. They're making no attempt to at all. And there's no battle formations being taken. The stuff that Putin is doing with the battleships and the frigates, that's routine exercises. We do the same things. What Putin was smart in doing it was the timing. He did it while this amassing of troops was going on, so it looks like an invasion could be imminent. But it's not.
Right. And you can say the exact same thing regarding Russia flying their bombers over Belarus. Okay, it was a military exercise. It was chest thumping. It was, you know, look at my bombers. I can fly, you know, but they never, you know, incurred into Ukrainian airspace. I mean, they never did it. You know, this is more posturing on Putin's part. Putin is making an idiot of the Western world right now, and he knows it.
And so are some of his ambassadors who are saying that the United States, it's almost like they're pushing for a war. They're making what's going on bigger than it really is, giving it more important than it really is. Putin amassing troops on the border is kind of like showing the Ukrainians, slow down, we're here, you don't want to go against us.
Well, and look
but
at...
not one shot has been fired.
No.
Not one shot has been fired. Not one toe has crossed the border. This has been going on now for over a month. This is not the formation you take when you're going to invade.
No, and even Ukraine's president, Zelensky, is saying everybody needs to calm down. He says,
exactly.
You know, he's saying we don't feel threatened. This is not anything out of the ordinary. You know, we're not worried about this. You know, and I mean, if an invasion was imminent, don't you think Zelensky would be a little bit itchy at this point? And he's not.
No, and not only that, I think Biden and crew and, you know, Jen Psaki and all the liberal talking heads, I think the reason they're almost fueling this fire because they need some kind of plus on the international front for a failed administration. So they're trying to make it look like Biden is standing up to Putin. He's not.
He's not. He's not.
How can you stand up to somebody who never really had an intention to invade?
That's just the point. You know, yeah. And that's what you see when you step back far enough to see the big picture. Now, we're going to find out on Friday when we're joined by an old friend of the show, Jake Danishevsky. We're going to find out if we're on the money with this or if we're not. The reason right. we're going to find out is Jake is eminently connected to that part of the world. He spent the right. early part of his life living in Ukraine. He and his family are from there. As a child, he moved to the U.S., to New Jersey, and he's become a U.S. citizen. He's a proud patriot, and he still has relatives that live in Kiev and in Moscow. So he's right. eminently connected to that part of the world. He knows what's going on over there. I reached out to Jake about a week ago. He said, I'd love to come on the show and talk about this. And so we'll find out on Friday whether Diane and I, with this joint article, hit it out of the park or whether we didn't. But in the couple of minutes that we have left, I need to tell people where they can find this article. There's several places you can go. Okay, you can go to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. You can go to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com. You can go to rspradio1.com. We don't care where you go. We don't care how you get the link, but grab the link and share it. The more people that understand what's going on behind the scenes and the players that nobody else, including the mainstream media, have the guts to talk about, but we do, the more we can get that word out, the more people can calm down on this thing and say, okay, you know, this is what's really going on. So grab the link anywhere you can, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, thenationalpatriot.com, or rspradio1.com. Get the link out there.
Yeah, and keep your eyes on Israel, folks, because if an Iranian announcement comes, the whole dynamics is going to change.
In a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. Well, folks, now you know why we told you this was an important show and you didn't want to miss any of it. If you did, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, catch up on what you missed, because this is important. Right now, this is nothing but a shiny ball to look at as far as Biden's concerned, while his own domestic and foreign policies are going to hell in a handbag.
Yeah, and the reason why is, look who his advisors are. Loyalists to Obama.
There you go. What will happen, and educated guests will find out on Friday just how good we were or how far off we were. Either way. But with that, Diane,
do we get
you and
A,
I,
B, C, D, or F?
I'm hoping for the A. I'm
so
hoping for an A.
And with that? Yeah, with that, I'll say nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday on Right Side Patriots.